This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and I'm joined in the studio today by BFM's Health and Living producer, Tina Camelia. Welcome to the show again.
Hi. Thank you.
So we have Tina in because we are doing something a little different. We don't have a doctor in the studio today. Instead, we are looking through different news headlines that have grabbed our attention over the last week. And we have a theme today. Let's see if it kind of comes through as we go on. As always, if you'd like to weigh in on the show, share any thoughts with us, please do so. Our phone lines are open. That number to call is 03-77-109-000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Our first story is about a four-year-old girl who saved her mother's life. So have a listen. This is the touching moment that four-year-old Susie McCash rang 999 to save her mom's life.
Hello, you two. The police, how can I help?
Mummy hasn't answered yet. I don't know why, but she hasn't answered yet.
What's your mummy doing now?
She's just sitting on the sofa. And doing nothing.
But is her eyes open?
No, they're shut.
They're shut. Is she injured? Is she hurt herself?
And before when we were out, she was just busy. But now she feels really poorly.
She's feeling poorly. Let's have a look. How old are you, Susie?
4.
Susie, ask Mummy what area it is you live. Can Mummy answer that?
And so this is when her mother started talking, but she was still struggling to breathe.
Hello, is that Mum?
Yeah,
allergy, right.
So what you might be able to have heard her there, she managed to say allergy, and moments later this happened.
Can you open the door? Can you be a big girl?
Well, I can't really reach the lock, but I'll have a go. It's open.
The door's open now, is it, Susie?
I can hear an ambulance.
You can hear an ambulance, can you? I can hear them in the background. You can see them. Well done, Susie. Wait, the police are going to help Mummy, okay?
So the backstory of this is this was released by Northumbria Police in the United Kingdom. And Susie had been out to the park with her mum, Rowena, when they came back home. But mum had fallen unconscious on the floor when she suffered a life-threatening allergic reaction. And then what you heard there was Susie calling 999, running to get medication and holding mummy's hand until the ambulance and police arrived. Police call handler Adam Hall said Susie was unbelievable. She was calm, she was collected, she knew where she lived, and she gave all the information that we needed.
She was absolutely fantastic. From start to finish, just precise information. I'm not sure how she knew all the information she did. I think she even came up with the words anaphylactic, which I don't know how four-year-olds know that.
This is how a four-year-old might know that.
Yeah, so her mom, Rowena, is a GP, and she's allergic to salicylates, which is found in everyday things like oranges, honey, almonds, even aspirin. And salicylate sensitivity is slightly different from salicylism, which occurs when an individual takes an overdose of salicylates. And the overdose can occur to anyone, even someone without an allergic reaction, and it can be deadly if untreated. So I think this is where it's the dose that makes the poison for the regular Joes like us. But it can be found in medications, perfumes, preservatives, but these are in very small doses that are harmless. And so for those with the intolerance, like Rowena, even a small dose can cause an adverse reaction, like what we have heard. And it was her reaction, her allergic reaction, that caused her to collapse, and she was drifting in and out of consciousness. Her airwaves swelled and her breathing stopped. So, and she has been in intensive care before this for the same condition. So it is very serious. It is life-threatening. And little Susie, she went to her mum's handbag to get her EpiPen, which is the adrenaline for the allergic reaction, and she waited for the ambulance to arrive. So I suppose in the household, when you're being brought up by a doctor, it's natural to be learning all these medical terms, especially when your mum has a medical condition. Then you should know what to say to 999 when you have to make that call.
I don't know if even as an adult I would have been able to make this call, but Susie did so well. And I guess what this speaks to is the notion of health literacy, right? The idea of how, and we talk about that notion on the show a lot, but health literacy is essentially this idea of it's not just literacy surrounding, you know, everyday life, how well you know how to do things, but it's how well you know how to talk about your health, communicate about your health, and even understand what's being told to you. Do you think that you would have been able to do this as a four-year-old?
I don't think so. I would just be panicking and crying. That would be me. But she was really calm. Like, you could see that she knows what to say, I mean, what to report to the police handler.
Do you think you were raised, or were you raised rather, in a household like Susie's, where conversations about medical conditions, about EpiPens for that matter, or, you know, whatever it would have been in your household, whatever medical condition was most pressing, were you raised like that?
Yeah, I know, for example, my mother, she has, she's allergic to penicillin. I knew that word from a very young age. I'm able to say that she's allergic to that because she's also had several health conditions where she might be prescribed penicillin. I should be able to mention that. So I probably won't be able to say salicylates or EpiPens, but I'll be able
or
to say...
Or anaphylaxis.
Yes, which is a very big word for a four-year-old. Even for an adult, I'd probably be struggling saying that word, so I'm avoiding it at all costs.
So, yeah, we're curious to know, you know, whether you were raised with good health literacy and whether your child would have been able to do the same. You know, feel free to weigh in on the conversation. We'll be kind of going back and forth on this. So that number to call if you'd like to speak with us or to share a story is 03-771-09000. You can also text 01620019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, without Susie's immediate reaction, her mum says she wouldn't be here to tell the tale. Here's what she had to say about that.
Just incredibly grateful. You know, we know she's bright, but we were so surprised listening to the call. Everyone says she sounds calm. To us, she sounds really nervous because she was quiet, one-word answers, but she gave them all the information they needed to help me. And obviously, we wish she had never been in that situation, but we're just immensely proud of how intelligent and resilient she was and how brilliantly she did. I've only listened to it once. Obviously, it's quite an emotional thing for us. I think, you know, we just encourage people not to underestimate their little children because, you know, they can really rise to the occasion if they need to.
We have more health stories coming up for you this afternoon. In the meantime, here's Janis Joplin with Cry Baby, of which Lil Susie certainly was not. You are listening today to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and together with Health and Living producer Tina Camellia, we're going through different medical news or health-related news that's caught our attention over the last couple of weeks or so. So earlier we talked about a four-year-old. Now we're moving on to a 10-year-old, is that right?
Yeah,
about 10. Because a fifth grader has made a discovery about stuffed animals and germs, and it managed to land her in a journal. What were you doing when you were 10?
I don't know. Learning how to run, I suppose, and still stumbling over things. I have no idea what I was doing.
I was trying to figure out how to win at jumping rope because I was terrible. But I certainly wasn't, you know, doing scientific experiments and theorizing in such a fashion that got me actually published. So we'd be curious to hear from you. What were you doing when you were 10? Is your 10-year-old just on the cusp of a great scientific discovery, perhaps? Give us a call. That number is 03-771-09000. You can also text 01620019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So back to the story at hand. Many school science projects will probably involve baking soda, volcanoes, potato clocks. Here, just a lot of papier-mâché and tauge, I think. But not for Gabrielle Zanes, because both her parents are doctors. So what happened was she got to thinking about what happens when kids end up in the hospital and people end up giving, by and large, I think, stuffed animals, you know, things that they can cuddle with. So she was curious about that, and she grabbed some stuffed animals in her own home and discovered just how many germs they had by rubbing sterile swabs on them and then taking culture samples. And then she came up with a way to make operating rooms more sterile, especially for kids, now dubbed the Sheena Protocol after her favorite stuffed cat.
This is the Sheena Protocol, and it's about how we could make stuffed animals safe enough to bring into the operating room.
It was her mother, Dr. Siobhan Murphy-Zane, a pediatric orthopedic surgeon, who first mentioned the dilemma to her daughter.
The push right now is to decrease the bacterial load for the entire OR, trying to minimize the amount of materials coming into the room.
So Gabby ordered Petri dishes and an incubator and set up shop in her Denver basement. She rubbed a sterile swab over each of her stuffed animals, as well as those from her two brothers' rooms, and she cultured the samplings. Stuffed animals help with staying calm, but it turned out they can also carry lots of bacteria into the operating room.
I just thought, why not just wash them? And so we did a study on how we could decrease them, and it worked.
So when the stuffed toys were washed, they had a 94% decrease in bacteria. And if Gabby's solution sounds simple, that's because it is. You know, think about people with already weakened immune systems. Think of how big of an impact her discovery could make.
So Dr. Murphy Zane ended up sharing the findings with a colleague at Vanderbilt University.
His lab was so thrilled, and they sent her a really nice note. They jokingly said that they'd been scooped by a fifth grader.
Dr. Jonathan Schunecker, the man in question who was scooped by a fifth grader, oversaw a similar study in his Vanderbilt lab and pooled those results with Gabby's findings. So the article is called Stuffed Animals in the Operating Room, a Reservoir of Bacteria with a Simple Solution, which was recently published in the Journal of Pediatric Orthopedics. Gabby Zane also received an A for her project. Her father, of course, is also Dr. Richard Zane, a professor and chair of emergency medicine at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. What I'm taking away from this more than anything else is the simplicity of the solution.
That's right. And I think part of it is because we are facing the antimicrobial resistance. And I think that that's been the conversation that they have over dinner and probably in their homes because, you know, both parents being doctors facing this basically public health crisis, right? And so it's just a childlike curiosity, childlike approach to things. And I think sometimes that kind of brings out really interesting results, really interesting studies like this. It's just a very simple study. I mean, getting Petri dishes, setting up an incubator, these are not very difficult things to do. And you just have to have the interest in it and a curiosity. And
I think we're also seeing a theme here, not just of kids in general, but also of parents feeling trusting enough or having enough faith in their children's intelligence to talk to them about their work as doctors, but also about the kinds of things that they could think about, resulting in something that has now officially been published in a journal.
Yeah, and I know what it's like, the struggle to get yourself published in a medical journal, in a science journal. It's not an easy process, and you know you have to be peer reviewed. And of course, she has a lot of help from her, I suppose, research fellow investigators in the Vanderbilt University. But yeah, and maybe you know you never know. This is maybe just the first of many to come for her.
I think this is a nice version of how to take your work home without it impacting your child in a negative way. We have more stories lined up for you today, as well as more music. So do stay with us. If you'd like to join in the conversation, if you'd like to share a story, do give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. And I'm Lee Chui Lin, joined by our producer of Health and Living, Tina Camellia. And we're taking a look through different stories, different health stories that were of interest to us and might be of interest to you as well. Today we've been looking, well, our first two stories both involved very, very bright, very, some might say, precocious children. And our third story is about a child who is slightly older, but also is no longer alive because a 14-year-old girl who died of cancer has officially won the right to be cryogenically frozen after a judge has backed her mother in allowing the body of her teenage daughter who died of cancer to be preserved in the United States, which is a process that her estranged father opposed. This, of course, raises the question of whether we all want to be cryogenically frozen until we have the technology to perhaps come back. I mean, that's the big dream, right, that you would sit in storage, you know, until such a time that the technology existed that would be able to revive you. I've thought about this. I've given this some thought. But before I say, you know, where I land, I would also like to say, do join the conversation. Would you like to be cryogenically frozen? That number to call is 03-7710-9000. You can text 01620019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Tina, I'm going to throw you under the bus, so to speak. First, have you thought about this?
I have. But I'm not sure. I think it's just not a very sustainable model, because if everyone wants to do it and if we do have the science to back it up, then we're eventually going to run out of storage space because everyone is preserved until maybe, a few hundred years from now.
And if we still have the same problems with overpopulation then as we do now, that's just going to make it worse, because you're going to have, you know, entire clans of people reawoken and just how do you account for that, right? Yeah. I'm not sure I want this. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure I want this. And also, I think it makes a difference to come back as a 14-year-old, for example, with so much left still to do, with hopefully the ability to learn things. I think if you were to do this as an 80-year-old and come back in 200 years as an 80-year-old, I don't know. I don't know if the value is the same. But anyway, tell us about this. I mean, how did this come about?
So the judge, Justice Peter Jackson, ruled that nothing about the case should be reported while she was alive because media coverage would distress her. And the girl's parents are divorced. She had lived with her mother for most of her life and had had no face-to-face contact with her father since 2008. She also resisted his attempts to get back in touch when he learned of her illness last year. And during the last months of her life, the teenager, who had a rare form of cancer — they did not disclose what kind of cancer she had — she began investigating cryonics. And according to the family attorney, Zoe Fleetwood,
she carried out this research over a period of months, knowing that she did not have long to live, and pursued it with determination.
Known only as JS, she sent a letter to the court saying, "I'm only 14 years old. I don't want to die, but I know I'm going to. I think being cryopreserved gives me a chance to be cured and woken up even in hundreds of years' time." Following the ruling that has been described by the judge as exceptional, the body has now been preserved and transported from where she lived in London to the US, where it's been frozen in perpetuity by a commercial company at a cost of about 204,000 ringgit a year. Or is that a year or forever?
I think it's forever. I'm not sure, but I'm sure that there should be some form of a storage fee for the years that it's going to be kept in storage.
I would think so, that there's storage, because there's also energy being used in this case. But during the course of the case, the father did change his mind and told the court, "I respect the decisions that my daughter is making. This is the last and only thing she has asked from me."
Since the first preservation by freezing in the 1960s, the process has been performed only a few hundred times. And the thing is that there are a few steps, crucial steps, to make sure that it can happen. First of all, the body has to be declared legally dead as soon as possible. And then it is immediately cooled using ice bath, and blood is flushed out and replaced with cryoprotectant solutions to prevent any damage to the body. And then the body is packed in dry ice for transportation and then placed in a storage tank filled with liquid nitrogen, which means that the body will be in a very cold temperature of up to around minus 190 degrees Celsius.
We've talked around this briefly in the past, but mostly to do with conserving things like sperm or embryos, especially for people who also have cancer. I think cancer is kind of a big theme here, because there is a certain degradation of the body that happens, and there's a certain idea of, I want to preserve some of it for as much as I can. And you find that happening. But human embryos, for example, can be cryopreserved for years and thawed for use later. But larger, more complex organs like a kidney, never mind a whole human body, is currently beyond science, and the scientific theory underlying cryonics is speculative and controversial. There is also, as we discussed earlier, considerable debate about its ethical implications.
Yeah, but adherents believe that clinical death is not the same as information theoretic death, which is the loss of information in the brain that makes recovery of the original person impossible. But the lawyer says that it's not the ethics of cryopreservation, but it's about respecting the wishes of a dying person.
This case was not about the rights and wrongs of cryopreservation. It was not about that. It was about respecting the wishes of a bright and intelligent and articulate 14-year-old. She knew she was going to die, and knowing that her wish to be cryopreserved was going to be followed gave her great comfort.
My concern here is also whether or not people would opt for a sort of premature euthanasia. I mean, I wonder whether that might happen, you know, because you don't want a body to be revived that is weak. You don't want a body that is ill. You would want a body that is as whole and perfect as possible. And, you know, when are you at your peak? At, say, 20? I mean, it's just getting to that point. Mm-hmm. But regardless of that, we still don't have the science. Theoretical physicist and futurist Michio Kaku explains this here.
Well, the devil is in the details. First of all, if you suddenly freeze the human body, the problem is that ice crystals begin to form inside the cells. As the ice crystals expand, they rupture the cells. So in other words, freezing the human body seems to work only superficially. But if you look at the human tissue under a microscope, you find massive tearing and disruption of cell walls. Now you may say to yourself, now wait a minute, fish do it, right? Don't they simply get frozen solid in wintertime? Frogs, aren't they being able to thaw themselves out when it's springtime from a block of ice? And the answer is yes, but they do it with antifreeze, that is glucose. Here's how it works. You know you put antifreeze inside your car, so even though outside everything could be frozen solid, but inside your car, liquids still flow normally, and so your car still runs. In the same way, glucose is an antifreeze for frogs and certain fish, that their bodies could still be in liquid form with blood circulating, even though they are frozen solid on the outside. Now, this doesn't mean that at some point in the future, we might be able to create a natural kind of antifreeze for the human body. However, at the present time, the levels of glucose found in frogs and fish that enable them to undergo sustained animation would kill a human being. So it would take genetic engineering. So I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying that those organizations that advertise that you can live forever this way may be misleading the public, because when the body is thawed out, what you have is dead tissue.
Meanwhile, the UK's Department of Health has begun reviewing regulations on cryogenics after a UK charity revealed that children as young as 7 have signed up. Cryonics UK revealed that it has about 4 or 5 children on its membership and had been asked to freeze a 7-year-old, but that process did not go ahead because the child in question died before any arrangements could be made.
Regardless, that's not the first high-profile controversial case. Last year, the youngest person to be cryogenically preserved was actually a 2-year-old Thai girl, Mathurin Navaratpong, who developed a rare form of brain cancer just after her second birthday. She died on the 8th of January, just before she turned 3. And by then, her parents, Athon and Narirat Navaratpong, both medical engineers, had made a decision that they hope may give her another chance of life.
Yeah, the father said that as scientists, we are 100% confident that this will happen one day. We just don't know when. In the past, we might have thought that it would take 400 to 500 years, but right now we can imagine it might be possible in just 30 years.
I don't know that that's okay. Well, I mean,
wishful thinking, I think.
And I understand why they would hope that. The first person to be cryonically frozen was James Bedford, an American academic in 1967. And Simon Cowell, of all people, announced in 2009 that he intended to be frozen after his death. And Walt Disney is not. So if you're now thinking about all these people sitting somewhere in storage and thinking about their frozen bodies, hoping to be revived someday, Walt Disney is not among them. Do not go looking for him. We have more stories coming up for you. In the meantime, we also have more songs. Here is The Smiths. Please, please, please let me get what I want. Quite fittingly, this is BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture, specifically Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Together with Tina Camellia, we're going through health news today that you would hopefully find intriguing. And we're ending on a bit of a high. The last story we had was about cryogenically preserving bodies. It was a bit heavy. But now, what if you're actually okay with growing old? what happens then? So it turns out that dementia research is taking some interesting twists and turns.
There was once a boy who lived by the sea. His father was a brave explorer. And when the boy turned 10, he took him on his first adventure.
Oh, no, snap.
In faraway seas, they found incredible creatures and captured them, not with a hook, but with a pen. They voyaged together until his father grew old. And then, one by one, his memories were lost. Washed away by time and tide.
So what you just heard is a trailer for an interesting video game that's just come out. It's a game about recreating an aging sailor's memory, and it also tests your navigation skills. But what it also does is it collects data about the gamer's sense of direction and ability to remember. And it's actually dementia research. Researchers who are looking into this game are hoping that the data can help to develop diagnostic tools for dementia.
The boy was now a man, and it was his turn to captain the ship. So he steered through the storms to find their old friends and bring them back to his beloved sea hero. Just like the boy who saved his father's memories, now you can save the memories of the future.
Right, so the mobile game is called Sea Hero Quest, and it's helping researchers study dementia, which is a global health threat, and currently it affects 47 million people worldwide, a number that is expected to triple by 2050. Getting lost is one of the first symptoms of Alzheimer's, which is the cause of 60 to 70% of cases of dementia. In this game, players will collect artifacts and in the form of memories while they navigate the sea, exploring detailed 3D environments. The game tests spatial navigation skills, one of the first skills to be affected by dementia. Researchers get anonymous data that shows how healthy brains navigate.
There's also a flare shooting task, which will test your sense of direction. Early data from the flare test shows that our sense of direction declines steadily with age. And right now it's being played by 2.5 million people, so it's become the largest dementia study in history. Researchers, just to put that in context, would have taken 9,500 years to collect the same data from a lab. Experts hope to develop the game into an early diagnostic test for the disease. Have you played it yet?
No, not yet, but I'll check it out after this.
I think it's just such a great idea. We keep hearing all these stories of how video games and games as a whole are being used for medical research or to increase, I guess, the performance of surgeons. We've read that in some cases, especially now with surgery no longer being necessarily scalpel in one hand and, you know, cotton in another. But I really think this is such a great way of going about things. Are you going to kind of introduce it to anybody? I mean, would your parents play it, for example?
Oh, my parents are a little bit tech challenged, but I would definitely like to try it out and see what it's all about. And yeah, it sounds like a very interesting game, and that especially because it's also contributing to research, so that's a good thing always.
Let us know if you would play this game, and in case you're interested in trying that out, again, just a plug, it's Sea Hero Quest, and it's a mobile phone game, so no excuses, you can get it anytime, anywhere. And that has been it from us today on Health and Living. Thank you for listening. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.